We got to start. Faye, you want to sit down? Good evening.
I thought I had.
Good evening. Let's get started. We have a public hearing tonight. Our first order of business tonight, welcome everyone, is the public hearing on deer on a measure to possibly allow deer and rifle hunting in Tompkins County. I have Lisa Dugan. Is there any? That's the only one. That's the only sheet we have. If anybody else wants to speak on this issue, you can get a blue form on the back table and bring it up. Lisa, hello.
Hello. How are you? Tell me when to start.
Sure. Usually folks stand at the microphone. So
what do I do?
If you wouldn't mind standing at the other microphone over there, right behind Henry, is fine.
Why didn't you tell me?
Thank you.
Oh, that's tall.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lisa Duggan, and I'm a 14-year resident of Tompkins County. I am vehemently opposed to allowing the extension of rifle hunting for deer and bear in our county. I think the last thing that we need to do is invite more shooting of any kind. Just months ago, my block was on lockdown for 8 hours because of a shooting inside the home next door. My 70-pound brindle dog and I enjoy walks through all of our beautiful areas, and we have been on the trail when we've heard shots, and it's very unnerving when you're deep inside a walk and you can't get out quickly. The notion of wearing orange as some sort of protection is ludicrous at best. I often see signs of no hunting in private property, and I see trucks parked on both sides of the road with woods on both sides, completely ignoring those signs, not just up here, on Long Island as well, Brookhaven Labs, tons of hunting all the time on private property. I would like to thank Richard John for his thoughtful and informative reply to my email, wherever you are. And I would like to bring up the conversation of the real threat of white supremacy groups on the rise. When I moved here, there was the Amelia Kearney case going on here, in which her daughter was told that you know what we do with N-words up here in the woods. And I actually work with people in jails, and I hear a lot of visceral language along those lines. And I was wondering with thinking about the Parkland families and the Sandy Hook families and the Brady family, do you think they would feel good about any expansion for any reason that you cited in the name of safety? I was wondering why we always have to acquiesce to the people with guns, because fall is the most stunning time of year, and yet I can't enjoy our beautiful areas because of this hunting. My version of loving nature doesn't include hunting, and phrases like responsible gun owner or gun safety are real until they are not. How is it that so many responsible hunters trespass and ignore private property signs? Gun safety for something that is created to kill sounds like an oxymoron. Those worlds fall flat in an age of murders by those who feel threatened by progressive sanctuary cities like ours, or that their white majority will be no more. I listen to those people who actually love to hunt, not to feed their families, but actually love the killing aspect of hunting, and who have racist ideologies. I meet with these people regularly, and they feel very emboldened in today's world. The Parkland shooter bragged on social media about killing animals. There is a direct link between harming animals and social pathology. There have even been laws written to stiffen penalties for harming animals. I feel any expansion of the use of deadly weapons cannot be justified and are unnecessary. White men are the largest block of hunters, and they're the largest block of domestic terrorists in our country today, and many cite that they love hunting when we watch the news about the shootings. They aren't just on TV, they're here, and their words haunt me. Please consider that no one will suffer without the expansion, but inviting more deadly weapons into our community could indeed be a catalyst for immense suffering. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Lisa. I have Irene Weiser.
Hi, Irene Weiser, here from the town of Caroline. It's a little bit of a gray area whether I'm speaking on behalf of myself personally or I guess what I can say is that we weren't in a board meeting. We shared some emails about the deer hunting with rifle topic, and all of our board members thought that it was not a good idea and expressed
that was not
a good idea to allow rifles for use for deer hunting. And for those that don't know, Caroline is a little bit of a hamlet that some kind of refer to as suburbs, but we've got quite a bit of rural land, and some of our board members, in fact, live on expansive rural land, and even they express concerns at the idea of allowing rifle hunting on their lands. And they're hunters. They themselves are hunters and use shotguns, and admitted that it would probably be, you know, easier to hunt using a rifle. But the concerns about safety were outweighed that. I think we've all of us experienced living out where we do hunters who seem to already not obey the posted signs, already not obey the kind of respectful behaviors that we would want to see, and this just seems to be a bit more of an invitation for dangerous stuff. I mean, it's scary to get out and walk your dog right now during hunting season. Scary to go to the wood pile. So, I wrote down, I thought it was particularly surprising, given the board member that this came from, this comment, that it seems a time for government to be asserting its obligation to set limits on firearms, not to back off the limits to their use. And so, anyhow, those are, as I said, sort of my thoughts and conveying thoughts of other board members, but we were unanimous in our opposition to the idea of allowing rifles for hunting deer. Thanks.
Thanks, Irene. Anyone else on this topic? All right. I'll close the public hearing and open the August 20th, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Roll call of members, please.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
I'm here.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I would like to start this evening with a proclamation, and I want to thank a couple of people who are here for reminding us that we needed to do this and helping us to write it. Would Sally Grubb and her family and Carol Kamen, our county historian, come up to the podium here? And all your family, whoever wants to come as well. I'll go over. Sally is representing the League of Women Voters.
Correct.
And Carol, again, our historian. And Sally wrote to me, reminding me that August 26th is a very special anniversary, Women's Equality Day. And I had no answer for why we haven't marked that day before, but it seemed a really good time to do it. So I'm going to get some help from our women legislators here to help me read this. And with the permission of our male colleagues as well. So they're not feeling left out. They're quietly in strong support. Whereas since the days when the United States Constitution was written excluding women from full participation as citizens of this country, the women of the United States have historically been treated as second-class citizens and have often been denied the full rights and privileges, public or private, legal or institutional, which are available to male citizens of the United States. And Amanda?
Whereas since the birth of our nation, women fought to resist their inequality in this land, as outlined in the Declaration of Sentiments, pronounced in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848 at the first Women's Rights Convention, and
whereas it would be 72 more years after that convention before women achieved full suffrage, with the approval of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, granting American women the constitutional right to vote by two-thirds of the states, officially certified on August 26, 1920, and
whereas in 1971 and again in 1973, Congresswoman Bella Abzu of New York introduced a resolution to designate August 26 as Women's Equality Day. That resolution was approved by Congress on August 16, 1973, and
whereas the right to vote was just one of the many basic civil rights denied to women for decades, and women still face inequitable treatment in the United States, including pay inequity, harassment and discrimination, and denial of the freedom of conscience to make her own life choices, and
whereas women here and elsewhere have united to advocate that these rights and privileges be available to all citizens equally, and
whereas we know that we stand on the shoulders of many others. So this proclamation honors the achievements of many local women, including Marietta Benchley, Harriet Mae Mills, Isabel Howland, Juanita Breckinridge Bates, Lucy Holly Hawkins, Carrie E. Booten, and others who worked to bring about suffrage in New York State in 1917. And
whereas on August 26, 2019, in the names of those who fought for equality for all, we celebrate Women's Equality Day across the country, marking the approval of the 19th Amendment. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim that the Tompkins County Legislature recognizes the commemoration of that day in 1920 on which the women of America earned their right to vote and designate August 26, 2019 as Women's Equality Day in Tompkins County.
I just want to say a very quick thank you for doing this. And it's hard to believe that it's still important that we recognize equal rights for women. The Declaration of Independence was adopted in 1776 with the words, "It's self-evident that all men are created equal." I think that did mean men, but I think it meant white men. It did not include women for many, many years. The 15th Amendment, including all men, was adopted in 1870. It took us until 1920 for women to get the vote. And then, even then, African American and Latino women were not treated equally, as we know. They weren't treated equally anywhere. And even now, we are not treated equally. Pay, in particular, is one place where women do not get equal dibs. And now we've just heard that Planned Parenthood has had to pull out of Title X, which means millions of lower-income women will be denied access to all health care because they can't afford it, and because before they went to Planned Parenthood clinics for free. But because Planned Parenthood considers it is a woman's right to choose for her health, herself, the health care she gets, they have had to pull out, or they deny the ability to tell a woman exactly what her health rights are. So that it is very important that we can continue every year to stress the importance of women's rights, the fact that we are equal. And I'm glad to see that there are equal numbers of men and women legislators around the table today. So thank you for that. And then finally, I want to say that women locally here are continuing to fight for women's equality. The League of Women Voters, we're non-partisan, so we support everybody's political background and encourage them to vote, teach them how to vote, register them as voters. We educate youth. We reach out in many ways, and we will continue to do that. The American Association of University Women also fights for women's rights, and Planned Parenthood as well. And together, the three organizations are joining together on Monday the 26th in celebration of women's equality. We will be on the Commons at lunchtime from 11:30 till 2, talking about our organizations, encouraging newcomers to register to vote, and upholding equal rights for all. And equal rights for me means equal rights for you. And it also means you can become a member, a voting member of the League of Women Voters. Thank you.
Thank you,
Sarah. Oh, and I'm going to reintroduce Carol, because Carol has for a long time been my history mentor. She's been a mentor for me in many different iterations. And so I was delighted when she helped write this proclamation. And I was delighted to introduce my children to her, and I will introduce them to you, my children. My son, Michael, who grew up here and went to school here, and his two children, Tarlene and Zarvan. And they were pulled here kicking and screaming because I told them it was a historical moment.
I think the message of our history is that it takes everyone to make change. And so in Tompkins County, while today we're noting the women who worked very hard, we also recognize that it was men who had the vote and men who helped women bring about the vote in 1915, again in 1917. And it was not until the 1970s that women had access as responsible citizens to the jury. To the jury box. So it's been a long, long struggle. It was worked on here. And the real message is that in history, we can see people, ordinary people who worked very hard on the behalf of themselves, but also on behalf of others. And we need to keep doing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. And the 1917 date was when women in New York got the right to vote in New York state elections, but still couldn't vote in federal elections till 20. All right. I would like to now go to public privilege of the floor. We have Faye Gougakis. And if anybody else out there would like to address the legislature, go get a blue form. And there's a three-minute time limit. I want to read the rules here. By signing the form, I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. Hello, Faye.
Good afternoon. I wanted to first say I haven't been able to make the last couple of meetings, and I'm here now, and I want to invite those members that are interested in joining with me and writing a resolution to the city about Lyme bikes and how they need to be better managed. So that's an open invitation. There's a couple people that we've been talking about doing it. We haven't gotten together yet, but that's an invitation for anybody to join, several of us that are already interested in doing that. The reason I want to do this is because the city shows no interest, and in fact, I think from reading the Ithaca Journal, the mayor seems to have lobbied hard to bring the scooters, you know, to our area. You know, it saddens me to see that a company is brought in the name of global warming or sustainability and acts very irresponsibly. They are operating in a very irresponsible way. With that, because we've talked a lot about that, okay, well, actually, I want to add Tim Loeb, because when I wasn't here, I heard Martha, I saw the meeting, and Martha said that Tim Loeb said to her that the Lime bikes are not heavy. Let me tell you something. It's more than him just saying that they're not heavy. He rolls his eyes. He doesn't care. There's a lot of people in City Hall like that, okay? When I was talking to George McGonigal after a meeting at the library and asked if I could talk to him for a second, Dan Kogan interrupted that meeting, was insulting to me, okay, and he then spit at me when I told him, I showed him a rude gesture in Greek.
You have 40 seconds.
Right, but to be spit at and then to deny it, and 2 weeks later I get a letter of restraint from the city of Ithaca. That's still being dealt with. But what I want to say here is that, and I'm going to run out of time, there is a connection between these devices, how we use the Lime bikes, how we use our cell phones. We are creating a world that's alienating us from each other. Okay, and I will say, this is something I've been wanting to talk about for a long time. I really believe violent video games are affecting our kids' minds and people's minds, because these technologies are affecting us, and we're not having that discussion. It just, we're now going into apps. We're now going to not have coupons. I mean, what is this cell phone going to, where is that taking us? I beg of you to think about it, because I would like to sue these companies, but I can't. I would love to sue the cell phone companies. I would like to sue Google. I would like to sue Amazon. But I can't do that. But I beg of you to think like the Native Americans seven generations ahead, where these technologies are taking us.
Thank you, Faye.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the legislature? All right. Municipal officials, Irene Weiser, you want to come up as a Caroline Town board member? Come on. You know, I don't see George or Duxon here.
I have a report from them.
Okay. Irene, want to make something up? Fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. I thought I'd just give her a little while. Thank you for being here, Irene.
For those of you that have driven by and wondered what the heck happened to our front lawn, we put in geothermal. And we're so psyched.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are confused by that because you thought we already had geothermal, we have had geothermal.
Talking about the Caroline Town Hall.
We have had geothermal in our annex for, boy, since it was put in, the new building, which houses our offices. And, in fact, the comptroller's office reviewed that some years ago to find and looked at it as kind of a model for, you know, what could happen in the state and found that we were saving the town considerable money with it. But we now have geothermal for our big old town hall, and that was supported in part by grants that we won, and we're super excited about it. So that's why we have a mess, but it's going to grow back with beautiful grass, and we're going to put in a bioretention pond, and we're pretty excited. So
sounds great.
Yep.
Sounds great. Thank you, Irene. Any questions for Irene? Don't go away. Any questions for Irene? All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. You want to, Anna, you want to Yeah, I just, help us out from the city?
Yeah, I got a list from them, an okay. email of things, so I'm just the messenger. So, okay, all right. The Green Building Code, they have been reviewing it. It has left committee. It is now going to full Common Council for review and vote. They just did a vote on the Green Street bus station. The intermunicipal buses will continue for the time being at the Green Street site. The Green Street development, they have, as you all probably know, they've narrowed down to the IRA is prioritizing the development with the conference center, and that also has 218 units of affordable housing between the range of 50 and 80. And the reason it's only 50 to 80 is because the series of grants that they're going for only allow for that range. That's the actual stipulation of the grant, in case people have questions about that. They had to identify an alternate in case the conference center doesn't happen. There were two alternates given. One was is a development of 173 affordable housing units, and one is 273. That will be coming to a vote soon. The last thing that I was asked to report out on as a favor is about West MLK. As some of you may know, West MLK Street is the central corridor artery of the city. It extends to the commons, and there are three blocks that are being considered. About 6 years ago, they upzoned it to six stories, and now they are considering downzoning it to five stories. And that is one block off of the downtown business district. So the downtown business district may actually make a public statement in response to this. One of the arguments, and I'm going to say this is my argument as well, is that because it's the central corridor, it is a commercial district, they need 500 units per year of housing to meet the current housing demand, and most recently sent a resolution to the county legislature outlining multiple whereas statements speaking of their housing crisis, and therefore if we do go ahead and purchase the Tioga development, that we should absolutely sell off Sears Street for that reason. I think this is a little bit of cognitive dissonance that the downzone may happen, and according to some local architects, that would be foregoing at least 40 units of development. The last thing I'll say about it is that the building code and zoning code don't necessarily meet. The significant increased requirements after three stories and four stories means that typically about six stories are needed to financially pencil out for a development. So downzoning to five stories may in effect actually be a downzoning to three stories. And that is something that they are arguing right now, and I will keep everybody informed on that one.
Thanks very much, Anna. Deborah.
So, Anna, what's the argument in support of downzoning?
Because it feels too big, not human-scaled, and they are concerned about the character of the neighboring
residential.
And I have heard another argument, which is that the downzoning will have a negligible impact. I don't agree, but that's the argument. Those are the arguments I've heard so far. There are other arguments, I'm sure, and that is it is currently being circulated, an announce or a proposal to downzone is being circulated. They will vote on it next month at their Planning and Economic Development Committee, and then it will move on to the full Common Council from there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Any other questions for City Alderperson Anna Kellis? And I know you've been going to the city meetings and reporting out, and to since we had to kind of budge our way into that, it's really good that some of you are doing that. So thanks,
Absolutely.
Anna. Okay. Did I miss any other municipal officials hiding in the corner? Okay. All right. Legislators. Glenn, and then Dan, then Deborah.
Thank you. I would like to let everyone know that the Groton Old Home Days is this weekend, August 23rd, 24th, and 25th. The Carnival Midway will run all open all 3 days. There's a Binghamton Zoomobile Friday at 6 to 8 p.m. The Groton Car Show is Saturday. Face painting is going to happen all weekend long. There's a chicken barbecue and Irish dance. Bicycle show and motorcycle show is 10 to 2:30 on Saturday. The 11th annual Vern Morton Photo Show is Saturday and Sunday. The parade is at 6 p.m. sharp on Saturday. And we'll have fireworks at 9:30 on Saturday night. So please come out and have all the great family fun for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Dan Klein, then Deborah, then Anna. Annie.
Thank you. We had a public hearing tonight on the use of rifles. This is an unusual public hearing. There's no resolution attached to it. I'm wondering if, Martha, you or somebody else could just say what sort of the intention is tonight. There are some people that, you know, spoke and are still here, might be listening, just to clarify that a little bit. Thank you.
Rich John, Chair of Public Safety.
Sure. The purpose of the hearing was really just to let people come in and talk on the issue. Wanted to make sure the whole legislature could hear from the public on this. We've had several public safety meetings where this issue has come up. The change would be to allow rifle hunting as an allowed weapon for the two-week deer and bear season, which goes from the end of November into the beginning of September. Right now, you can hunt deer and bear with shotguns, with pistols, with crossbows, with bows and arrows, and I think muzzle loaders. Most of the state allows rifle hunting as well, and so a group of hunters came to the Public Safety Committee with information about safety statistics and said we would request consideration of this. In the course of discussing it at the Public Safety Committee, the idea of a public hearing was floated and everybody thought it was a good idea. I anticipate this will get voted on one way or the other at the next public safety meeting. And if passed, it'll come back here.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you both. Deborah, then Annie.
Well, Dave McKenna and I have the pleasure of serving on the board of the Soil and Water Conservation District here in Tompkins County. And although I'm not a long-term legislator, so I don't know all the history, it was my understanding that when John Negley came in and took over as manager for the district was in considerable financial difficulty and owed a considerable amount of money to the state of New York. So at our last meeting last week, we got the financial report from Insero for the year ending last December 31st. It was an unmodified opinion. It found no material weaknesses. It found no material instances of noncompliance. But even better, under John's management, the fund balance grew from a negative 53,000 whatnot to a positive 236,000. So that's about a $300,000 gain over 5 years. It also showed that money from state grant sources tripled during that same time period, and that expenditures of the district to implement various grants doubled to over $1 million. And I just want to congratulate John and his staff and to brag a little bit on them, because I know they've been working really hard to dig out of that hole and they've done a great job. Thank you.
That is really wonderful news, and I hope Joe Mariana is watching tonight because he led the district, and I guess Jim Dennis and Dave McKenna were on the – Dave, you have been on that board for a long, long time. You were at the time, I think. Really took the whole issue by the horns and made some important things happen. It's great that John and his staff have followed it through, and that's a great position to be in. Thanks, Deborah. Annie.
Thank you. Let's see. So some of what I have is kind of a report from the town of Ulysses. At their board meeting this week, they they unanimously agreed on a couple of three resolutions, which I believe were sent to the legislators. So one was encouraging someone either adding somebody to deal with water issues or appropriating somebody possibly from planning to make sure that or to in hopes that we would spearhead and coordinate all the different issues with water. So you can check your email if you haven't seen that. And then they also passed a resolution encouraging and requesting that we spend more money in our highway department to get the roads in better condition. And also, the last resolution they passed was against expanding the use of rifles for large game. And on a totally different subject, I wanted to just tell folks on the other side of town, there's some recreational things going on this week in Trumansburg. It's the annual Trumansburg Fair, and it's starting tonight, so if we got out at 7:30, we could all run over there and catch the demolition derby. So I just wanted to point that out. Thursday, so it's on every day through Sunday. There's various livestock. There's a petting zoo. There's a horse pull. Trying to remember what night. It might be Friday night. I'm going to try and go over to the small. They're having a kids like electric car demo derby. So that's always fun to watch kids being aggressive and smashing up stuff. That's what my friends who are parents say. And Thursday night there is a concert at the fair. That is a Led Zeppelin cover band followed by a Pink Floyd cover band, which unfortunately I have a conflicting meeting. And I could go on, but there's a lot of fun things there, so please go over and check it out and have some fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Anna Kellis.
I just wanted to thank everyone and let people know this last year we had our annual Women Swim In event. It was beautiful and sunny this year instead of last year that we got rained mostly soaked beyond what the lake could do to the point where it was canceled at the end. This year, gorgeous and sunny, choppy. It felt like we were in the ocean. But we all made it across. They sent us over early. And the thing that I think is most wonderful this year, last year, we fell somewhat short of our goal. This year, thank you to some of you also for supporting my swim across. We raised over $415,000. So that will all go to HospiCare, and none of that goes to administrative, by the way. That all goes to services to help people transition in grace regardless of ability to pay. And I am so proud of our community for doing that. The other one that I want to remind people, I have to get the doctor's approval to participate this year, unfortunately, for my knee, but keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully I will be doing the AIDS ride this year as well. And that is September 7th, obviously in as a fundraiser for the AIDS work locally. So whether I ride or not, you are certainly willing to support me and any other person who's doing it, and hopefully we will raise a significant amount of money for them as well. So thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Anna. Anybody else? Mike Lane.
We have over 700 wonderful employees in this county. And yesterday we had an event, thanks to our administration, our human resources department, and others who put together our annual barbecue picnic at Stewart Park. It was an absolutely gorgeous day. Nice breeze. We were in the main pavilion, which my compliments to the city. It's been repainted inside, looked bright and cheery. We had children. We had adults. We had people taking turns serving. We work in 12 different buildings in this county. And it's very easy for people never to see some of the county employees that work in different departments. This gives them the opportunity to rub elbows with folks. Maybe social services can rub elbows with the health department. Maybe legislators can see some of the folks that work for us that we don't see all the time. We know the close group we always work with, but we don't always see everybody. There are people at the public safety building. There are people at the mental health building and some of the smaller buildings all over the county. It's about people at our county. They are the people. They are what makes this the best county, because they deliver the service to the people of our county properly and with a smile. And I want to congratulate all of them and say that I'm very pleased. For the fourth year now, I think we've had this event, and every year it just gets better. It's only 4 hours.
Thanks very much, Mike. And I would add thanks to Jonathan Wood and Jason Molino and Jay Franklin and Sheriff Derek Osborne for helping to raise money for the Cancer Resource Center by submitting themselves to the dunk, what do we call it, the dunk pool? The dunk tank. And it was a lot of fun. And we look forward to doing it again next year. So, anyone else? All right. I've been thinking really hard about my report tonight because I want to address something that is really hard, but we have to look at it as a country. 400 years ago this month, the first slave ship arrived in Virginia. It was the São João Baptista with some 20 captive Africans from Angola. The first recorded delivery of human chattel, of humans for sale from the kingdoms of Ndongo and Congo. They landed, ironically, in port called Point Comfort, and so began the tragedy of the United States that has affected everything in our country, from the physical landscape, the economic environment, social, emotional, religious. Everything about our country bears the marks of that event 400 years ago. So I just thought, and the New York Times has started a series of essays and stories and poetry and history called the 1619 Project, and I recommend it to everyone. We all need to learn more about what happened here. And I just would like to ask for a moment of silence to reflect on that and to reflect on how important it is that we pay attention and that we work for equality and equity and justice for all. Thank you. And on the more mundane side, I have a couple of chair's appointments to the Workforce Development Board: Darian Pruitt, Kira Francisi, and John Cometti. And I wanted to thank folks who came to the Borg Water Room last Wednesday for the Public Service Commission's hearing on the NYSEG rate case. The room was full. The big, the full Borg Water Room was packed. More than 60 people signed up. A lot of people had to leave before they got to speak. But if anybody has comments, you can still have the comment notice here. Comments will be accepted at any point while this proceeding is pending, but are requested by August 26, 2019, to ensure full consideration. So I would just urge people who, especially folks who came to the hearing, didn't get to speak, or anybody else who has anything else, anything they would like to address about the NYSEG rate case, try to get those comments in by Monday. And Marsh, is our press release about the hearing still up on the website, on the county's website?
Okay, or folks can go to search for that on the Department of Public Service website, dps.ny.gov. All right. Thank you. That's what I have. Any questions about any of that? All right. County Attorney Jonathan Wood. I'm sorry, County Administrator Jason Molino.
Thank you very much. Just a few things to update. I have recently volunteered, through good or not, to participate in the NYSAC Bail and Criminal Justice Reform Task Force. There have been a series of questions. You're probably mostly aware of some of them, bail reform, discovery changes. It's been a series of criminal justice changes with the last state budget. There's a lot of unknown questions. We'll be talking about some of them at the budget process, but in the meantime, NYSAC has put together a task force composed of several administrators. I'm one of them, some district attorneys, some county attorneys, a public defender, a few probation folks across the state to try to get arms around what these changes mean and what they'll mean to us, what they'll mean to different to prosecutorial services, to public defense, to probation departments. So it's something I'm participating in. I've been on one conference call. I'm in touch with NYSAC on a regular basis as we put together the budget, because there'll be some budgetary impact. To what extent, we're not quite sure yet. Also, we've had an internal meeting with assigned counsel, district attorney, sheriff's office, myself, and Pat Bouchel, probation, to kind of go over what we know today, and we'll probably have a working group of staff as some of the changes unravel and begin to be implemented at the beginning of the year. A lot of uncertainty from the state. They're not quite sure how some of this will unroll. A lot of discussions with the Office of Court Administration. So I just wanted to make you aware that I'm participating in that task force, and that there'll be more to follow, and I expect we'll know more in the next 30 to 90 days as the go-live date begins. On that note, prior legislation, October 1st is the second and final phase of Raise the Age implementation, including now 17-year-olds. Again, kind of, if we've learned from that process from the first time around, a lot of what-ifs, a lot of unknowns with Raise the Age being rolled out last October, and not necessarily a lot of the apocalyptic theories that were going to happen didn't happen. The ceiling didn't fall. Things didn't cease. Services didn't stop. In fact, just the opposite here in Tompkins County, we reacted very well. Courts fell in place. District attorneys were able to cooperate with different agencies to be able to address the one or two cases that we've had. So we continue to monitor it, but October 1st is the second and final phase of the rollout, including 17-year-olds, 17-year-old youth. Aside from that, for the past 2 weeks or so, and probably for the remaining part of this month, Kevin and myself have been entrenched with the budget discussions and crafting the budget and all that goes with that. For the most part, we are done with departmental meetings. We have a few follow-up meetings tomorrow, and then we'll be finalizing the numbers and hopefully have the budget to the printer early next week and ready for you the day after Labor Day. One thing that is playing an important part of this budget planning process is the energy strategy that the legislature adopted the last legislative meeting or the one before that has a very aggressive suggestion or approach to minimizing fossil fuel use in county facilities. So we have begun to try to incorporate that in the planning process, the capital planning process. And I would expect with the two ongoing discussions around a new potential downtown facility as well as public safety building improvements, capital investment and infrastructure will play a key theme discussion and part of this proposed budget. Aside from that, I would like to say that the employee picnic was excellent. It was great to see many of the legislators out there. And also, while Jay Franklin raised the most money, I do think that there should be a call to the rules because he employed his children to do a lot of the hustling, and I don't know that that's fair play. But Jay raised the most, followed by me, Jonathan, and then the sheriff trailed in the back. But we all had a lot of fun, and it was a good time. So appreciate everybody coming out. And congratulations to the staff and the organizing committee that did a great job with it. A lot of work they go into it. They really pull it together. And, you know, the days leading up to it, they're very busy, and they put on a great program and really done a great job. This year, I think we also had 100 more people sign up than last year. So that's a pretty substantial increase in participation. I think a lot of positive feedback. Department heads were some would say forced, some would say recommended that they participate and serve food. But I think everybody had a good time at the end of the day. So appreciate everybody coming out.
And I saw a lot of us legislators serving ice cream and food as well. And we're going to learn that next year we bring hats.
Yeah. The nets were great. Nets, some of you looked very good in the nets.
Not so great. I think the sheriff needs to be commended for getting dunked in his full uniform.
Well, but no shoes.
No shoes.
No shoes. No weapon either. So, Deborah.
Well, I wanted to second everybody's great opinion of the picnic. It was wonderful. It was wonderfully planned and wonderfully executed. But I would like to ask if maybe next year we could not have plastic. Yes. Plates and
there was already a recommendation, so there's a lot of Heather Buck sent around. I don't know if it made it to the legislators. Recommendations of next year when we have bags, we have non-plastic bags.
Thank you.
Yeah, understood.
Any other questions for Jason? Thanks, Jason. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
No report.
Thank you. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you. Real briefly, in your red folders tonight, we have just received our July sales tax figures, and if you turn to that sales tax distribution summary, in that middle section, Mark County, we're going to be looking at a 5.61% increase for the month of July, which is very good. I think just about every month this year so far, with the exception of one, I think every month has surpassed last year's month in 2018. So July was up, just like we've seen most of the other months. If you look at the year-to-date distributions, the county's total at this point is $21,787,167 compared to $20,798,697 in 2018. The increase is $988,000. Compared to last year at this time. And the year-to-date mark at this point is a 4.75% increase. And that's all I have on sales tax. The only other remarks I have for this evening is when we move later on in the agenda, if you have questions on resolution N, where we're amending the capital improvement program for the Bostwick Road, there were some questions in committee about what amount of reserves remained in the D fund or the road fund, and I have a printout of what that is, so I'll hold off any remarks until we look at resolution N. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions for Rick? All right, thank you very much. Can I ask for other resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. Action. Rich John, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'd like to ask to withdraw Resolution B from the consent agenda. This is ID 8816. It's my understanding that this resolution needs to visit with the Budget Committee and has not yet done so.
So not... I think the committee did discuss it, but there were some additional questions. Mike?
We moved it. We had more questions. We withdraw it. I thought we had brought it back, but I guess we didn't. So we need to talk about it some more. But you're exactly right, Rich.
So it's not just pulled from consent onto the regular agenda, but you're withdrawing it for tonight?
Yes.
Okay. Annie?
Thank you. I'd like to propose adding an executive session to talk about a real estate issue.
Okay. Well, that would be something we could discuss at the very end of the meeting if you wanted to move that at the end of the meeting.
one? Move it at the
that's
end?
Not a
okay.
Motion. Yeah, that's not a motion for now.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So after we do the minutes. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Anna Killis.
I wanted to add to the agenda a resolution award of 2019 Strategic Tourism Implementation Grant to Ithaca Tompkins County Convention and Visitor Bureau for Professional Services for Tourism Improvement District Formation. That's ID 8776. I can explain it to people would need once. One little introduction.
In your red folders, is there a second to adding it to the agenda? Henry seconds. All in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Okay, that's added. Let me read through the consent agenda, and then let's do O, Anna, so that you know staff can go ahead. But I'll go through the consent agenda. For appointments, I have to the Environmental Management Council, Ron Szymanski, to the Historical Commission, Susan Holland, to the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium Board of Directors, Lisa Holmes and Sarah Thomas. Resolution A, 2019 budget transfer for Raise the Age Consulting, ID 8796. Resolution C, audit of final payment, Elmira Structures Incorporated, Tompkins County Food Scraps Transfer Building, Recycling and Materials Management Department, ID 8800. Resolution D, authorization to transfer funds from the airport fund balance to the airport operating budget for professional services, consultant fees, and award of contract at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8826. Resolution E, authorizing supplemental agreement number 16 with CNS Companies for General Aviation, U.S. Customs, and Border Protection Facility, construction phase services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8827. Resolution F, authorization to execute supplemental funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, PIN 3756.18, Ludlowville Road, County Road 159, Bridge Reconstruction, BIN 331-4350, Town of Lansing, ID 8830. Resolution G, audit of final payment, bridge reconstruction, Dodge Road over Cascadella Creek, BIN 320-9890, Town of Dryden, ID 8831. Audit of final payment, bridge reconstruction, West Malloryville Road and Red Mill Road bridges over Fall Creek, BINs 320-9780 and 320-9790, Town of Dryden, ID 8832. And Resolution I, authorizing supplemental agreement numbers 10 and 11 with CNS companies for the design and bidding services, rehabilitate taxiway A, Phase 2, and D, and rehabilitate taxiway A, Phase 3, and E, design and bidding services, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport, ID 8834. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Thank you very much. Some folks can go home. Anna, would you take O, please?
Absolutely. So I would like to move the Resolution O, Award of 2019 Strategic Tourism Implementation Grant to Ithaca-Tompkins County Convention and Visitor Bureau for Professional Services for Tourism Improvement District Formation. That's ID 8776.
Seconded by Leslin. Go ahead, Anna.
Just to give a very brief overview on this, it doesn't seem super controversial, but as you all know, we are interested in exploring the opportunity of having a conference center in the downtown business or the downtown business district. And there is an exploration that will take place with this grant funding to look at the possibility of forming what is called a tourism improvement district. Some of you are familiar with a BID. It is similar state law, not exactly the same, but similar in concept in that it is not paid for by local taxpayers, but it is a fee that is added to room tax for participating. In this case, it would be hotels. The intention is to hire an agency that could explore what it would look like here, is it feasible, what would be the details, and whether or not we want to move forward with that. So it's a study, and it will be using the STI funding from the STPB. So I think that's it in a nutshell.
Thanks, Anna. Annie?
Thank you. I just wanted to add, and you can fact check me, Anna, or anybody else from the committee, that I believe it would not, the tax would not be on, or the fee would not be on B&Bs, Airbnbs, or
correct.
But it would only be 50 rooms or more, the hotels that had 50 rooms or more.
So all the details of what the final state of what it will be is part of the exploration of the study, but that is the working definition, as it were, for now. Yeah.
Anyone else? Dan.
I have a number of things to say about this. First of all, it was not on tonight's agenda. This is kind of a big deal, and I literally just saw it 30 minutes ago. The public did not know this was on the agenda, so I'm very uncomfortable with moving this along tonight. I am not opposed to a conference center, but this is not a vote on a conference center. This is a vote on establishing a new tax. And again, without a lot more public discussion and a lot more knowledge on my own part, I'm very uncomfortable voting to move this forward. This money would come from the Strategic Tourism Implementation Grant, quote, for implementation of critical actions identified in the 2020 Strategic Tourism Plan. But a tourism improvement district is not mentioned in the 2020 Strategic Tourism Plan. At least I didn't see it in there. So if I missed that, I guess I would like someone to point that out. And also, there was a little bit of discussion in the media, there's a little bit of write-up about the issue of the conference center itself. And here are some of the things that the media reported. So I don't know if this is true, but I'll explain why this matters to me if it is. It's been reported the conference center would lose a lot of money for the first 4 years, didn't give the exact amount, and then it would stabilize. But it would stabilize at an annual loss of $225,000. Each year, every year, the conference center would come up $225,000 short. So again, before I can responsibly vote to study a plan to move forward with a conference center, but not knowing what the long-term finances are, I'm not comfortable doing that. And finally, I continue to object to the transfer of money from direct programs, in this case, a number of the local arts organizations who had their ACOD, which is one of the program lines, that grants were cut in 2015, and a number of those organizations have not been restored to the level of 2015 yet. And so here's some money that could go to restore those cuts, but it's being used for another purpose, and I don't feel comfortable about that.
I'm going to answer the process questions first. First, I also want to clarify a word you said, Anna. You said to decide whether we want to move forward with this. We is a really big question. Yeah. It's not we.
It's not we as county.
It's not the county.
Find the cut.
So the purpose of this really is to study it, to answer the kind of questions you're asking, Dan. I mean, it's like, how do we know, how does anybody know if this should be pursued, if we don't have a professional study? This was on last legislature meeting's agenda, so it was duly published and noticed. It was on the agenda, and it was determined there were questions and there was some clarification that was needed. Jason had a meeting in between our legislature meetings where a lot of that was hammered out, and then there was confidence in moving this forward. So I think there's certainly been plenty of public information that this was coming and that it was discussed at length at the committee, et cetera. So it's completely within a committee chair's rights to pull a resolution from an agenda and then just bring it back at a subsequent meeting. So, Anna, you had your hand up.
Just a couple things. I did want to point out that it was in last month's agenda, so people have had the opportunity to see it. So I think that's really important, and I do appreciate that you brought that up because, you know, I don't think that unless something is super time sensitive, we should slide things under. But it has been in public, and it was passed through committee, so it has followed that process, as Martha says. The STI funding is an official bucket of funding within STPB, so it is not actually the case that once money is approved by us, we as a legislative body did approve the buckets of funding that were established within the STPB funding round. And STI has a very explicit and detailed definition of what it can be used for. This does fall within that purview. Switching money around after we as a legislature vote on the budget is not actually legitimate to just transfer money around to different grant sources. So I'm not sure I agree with that, although we can certainly continue to argue ACOD. I'm happy to continue to do that. I'm just not sure that this is particularly that case. We did mention last month that, and I'll bring this up for people just for information, one of the issues was whether or not, and this was brought up in committee, whether or not this particular study should focus on the conference center or larger tourism marketing. There were two statements that we were unsure of. So that was brought up last month on the floor, if people recall, and that has now been clarified and that it will be focused on the conference center. And I also will remind people that this is not a local tax. And the piece that you mentioned, Dan, is in fact correct, that they are exploring ways to meet the gap in the funding for the operations. And part of why they want to study this is explicitly because it could meet that gap, which would allow it to be net neutral and would allow us to have a conference center. One of the presentations that was done by the CVB at committee, which I very much appreciated, and we do have someone here, Peggy, from CVB, if anybody has any specific questions. But one of the points that she brought up was millions of dollars money that could be brought into the local community that is not because we do not have a conference center. And that includes people, agencies that call to try and set up conferences here, but we don't have the facility. We don't have the size. So they have done that calculation, and it was a bit stunning what could be here in our community and what we are currently foregoing. So it's a very small amount of money for a potentially very large gain, and on top of it, that it wouldn't come from taxpayer money. So this is just a study to see if it is feasible and what is feasible. And I would note lastly that it won't continue if the conference center doesn't continue. So if the conference center is not part of it, then the TID would not be formed.
Any other questions? I've got Peggy Coleman is here from the CVB, Katie Borghella here from the Planning and Sustainability. If you have, or Jason, if any of you wants to add anything, Jason, you had additional meeting. No pressure, but if any of you wants to.
Can I answer any questions?
Okay, any other comments, legislators? Rich.
I just had a question. I support this. I think this is an important thing to take a good look at. But I just for clarity, is this time sensitive? Dan has asked if there could be more time for him to consider it.
Yes, this is because it, part of the evaluation is part of the grant work. So when they are looking for whether or not they're going to be moving forward in the city with the conference center or not the conference center, this is part of that conversation.
So. Okay. Thank you.
Deborah.
I am curious about one thing. If, in fact, there is a conference center and it operates routinely at some sort of deficit, who's on the hook for the deficit for the operating cost?
So that's actually part of the study. That's a super good question, is who would be administering it? Would it be the city? Would it be the county? Would it be the DIA? These are all, which is another reason why it's very time sensitive. It shouldn't be assumed that it is any one of those. So I think it's a super important question to answer.
Thank you.
are ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution O, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes 13 to 1.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. And now I think we have folks in the audience who are waiting for the Downtown Facilities Committee report. Nod if that's true. Okay. Glenn, would you mind moving up your report? And you don't have any resolutions, but if you...
No. The Downtown Facilities Committee met on August 8th. The closing date for the, is still November 2019. Graham Gillespie from Architects provided a presentation on the proposed renovations of 408 North Tioga Street. After his additional walkthrough and construction consulting, consulting with the contractor, his estimate to the cost of renovate 408 would be similar to new construction costs. So it would be the exact same cost as building a new building. After Graham's presentation, the committee had a consensus that the property could be included in their overall design while preserving the property to benefit the neighborhood. It was also resolved that, to precede using scenarios that incorporate the use of 408 North Tioga Street and not sell the property. It was also moved that any scenarios considered for the proposed project moving forward will only include housing options on Sears Street. With no vehicle traffic committee access from Tioga Street to Sears Street, committee members agreed that it is too early to decide the, or determine the size of the building. Our next meeting is October 10th. September 12th will be canceled, and there we'll have a resolution next meeting to talk about 408.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. Any questions? All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Thank you, Glenn. All right. Back to other committee. We'll go through the committee reports. Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Government Operations has not met since our last legislature meeting. We meet again on September 5th.
Anything for Mike? Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
So at our next meeting, which is next Monday, we will have a presentation from Ken Schlother at CCE about how money has been used for improvements at 4-H Acres and problems that they've run into with the packing or shipping crate plan. So there may be some changes to how money is used. If anybody is interested in learning more about that, please come. Also, I think we'll be hearing about the Ag District update that the state requires CCE to do. And finally, I think we will be considering a resolution that embodies many of the comments that were made by people at the public hearing that we want to express our concerns as a county about NYSEG's rate increase to the Public Service Commission. So lots of exciting stuff.
Thank you, Deborah. Any questions? Okay, thanks.
A quick question.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
The Ag District process, do you know enough at this moment to be able to say a little bit about that, about the timeline of that, or should
No, I don't, and I think that's one of the reasons that Monica wants to come and fill us in. I know that it's something that we really don't have a choice about doing, but other than that, I don't have a clue.
Okay, thank you.
If anybody else does, I'd be happy to hear about it.
Henry?
How are you going to capture the... Well, the feelings about from the NYSEG public hearing, how are you going to express that as a county?
Well, I would merely be presenting many of the talking points that were raised and indicating that we agree with them. They will not be as emotional and colorful. But, you know, there are some serious concerns, I'm sure, that we all have about the quality of the service we're getting from NYSEG and whether or not the proposals that justify this rate increase request really meet the needs that are indicated by the failures of service that we've had so far.
Anything else? Henry, I thought you were going to answer the Ag District question. So.
No.
Okay.
That would be surprising.
Yes.
Well, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions. Okay, anything else for Deborah? All right, thanks very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We met on August 16th. Most of our work was in the resolutions that we've been talking about. I will mention one of them, and that was Resolution D, which we took some money out of contingent fund to cover the expenses of an expert witness for the district attorney's office for the special prosecution of a criminal matter involving a county employee. It was expensive. It's a $10,000 hit, but we really don't have any control over that because it is professional services, and the special prosecutor out of Schuyler County felt it was necessary for the proper prosecution of this matter out of his office. So we had to pay it, and that's why it's before you. I equated it to what we have to do with the engineering costs for the airport. Those costs are simply pretty much mandated what we will do by the Federal Aviation Administration. We just have to go through, and we swallow hard, but we have to pay for them because we can't get the federal grants without them. We had a report out of the Human Resources Department on some of their activities. It should be noted that Lisa Holmes is temporarily moved over to managing that department during a transition period, and we're appreciative to her for doing that while this transition moves forward. They told us that, I think it was in June, that they gave 32 civil service examinations with approximately 168 candidates participating in those civil service activities. And there are 24 civil divisions in our jurisdiction. Remember, we, other than the city of Ithaca, we are the civil service representatives for all the towns and villages that are out there. If you're doing your calendars early, you might mark May 14th, 2020, which will be the next 25-year club dinner. And, of course, collective bargaining is something that we do and is ongoing, particularly the Sheriff's Correction Officers Unit and the Road Patrol. And those are both in current negotiations. Don't have anything to report on that, but I know they've been busy. Mm-hmm. So glad to answer any questions.
You have Resolution J.
Well, we better take that then.
Yeah, and I will say it's on packet page 20, it's lettered as K. It should be J. In summary agenda, it's correct as J. That's packet page 20.
Makes me think of the movie Men in Black, J and K. Resolution to allow management and confidential staff on the Platinum Insurance Plan to participate in the Blue For You Wellness Program in 2020. I so move.
Second by Leslin. Discussion. Annie.
Thank you. I've talked to Jason a little bit about this, but so I just wanted to put that out there, that there's an opportunity for the legislators also to be included in this, or we're included automatically. So I just wondered if you wanted to clarify that.
My understanding, yes, your benefits follow the same management confidential health care benefits, unless otherwise noted. So you would follow, you would have, if you're in the Platinum plan, you'd have the opportunity to participate in this.
And I just also wanted to say I've attended, whether it's in a couple different venues, had presentations or attended presentations by our HR department on this new or fairly new program of health insurance, and I think it's a great program. I like that it's incentivizing people to be healthier and also help them reduce their costs. So thank you.
And I wanted to clarify that in an earlier presentation about this, Jason, I thought you said that people who get their health insurance through a significant other, a spouse, whatever, somebody else's insurance, that part of this was we could, like myself, we could get a cash benefit because we're not on the county's insurance. Not true. Whatever he said, that was wishful hearing in from me. So that's if you're on somebody else's plan, this is no more appropriate, you know, no more for you than any of the rest of the benefit discussions we talk about. So any other questions or comments? All right, all in favor of Jay, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Anything else, Mike?
No.
All right, thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday on the 28th, 3:30 p.m. right here in the legislature chambers. I appreciate and felt like a happy cat sitting around the table listening to all of the comments about the employee picnic. And I do want to give kudos to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, however many years ago, and the work that was done through the climate survey and implementation team that was headed up by Christina Dravis and Tom Knight, when Tom was here, that brought forward, when we heard from employees in the rollout, the idea that this is something that they'd like to see happen for the very reason that Mike mentioned. Employees get an opportunity to see each other, to know who's working where, to connect, to recognize and support each other in a way that they aren't able to do on a daily basis. And so I'm happy to hear it was done. I really regret that I was not here to participate in the dunk tank activities. and really do want to give kudos to everyone again who helped pull this together. I know often in municipalities there's always this big debate sometimes about whether you can or can't. This is about employee recognition. This is about those simple hygiene factors that make people feel included, that they want to be a part of this organization. And when we see our climate survey, we see that. We see that as something that folks don't leave. And they're very big on being, feeling like they belong and having opportunities like this. So thank you all on behalf of WDIC for everyone who worked so hard to make it happen this year, and hope we can continue to do these things. So when folks want to know what we do with the climate survey, there are things that come out of it that's for the benefit of our county government, and I want to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions? Annie?
Thank you. I wasn't sure where to comment on this, so I'll do it here. On the LGBTQ law enforcement subgroup planned a tour of three nearby, well, not exactly nearby, but close. Many of us spent 12 hours going to three adjacent jails to see how they were set up to look at housing, more appropriate housing for people who are transgender, and also, people had various reasons for going, so I'll let people speak if they want to speak about that. And so just a couple of quick comments. I was I was quite taken aback to, I mean, I've heard these stats, but to be in another county where they, some of them had half the amount of population we do, but had twice as many beds in their jails, and they were often at capacity. And so in other words, if you put those numbers differently, four times per capita beds in their jail as we do. And so I wanted to also thank everybody for going. And I guess the other takeaway was we were looking for just ways to improve diversity and safer spaces. And we didn't get a lot of ideas, so we're in this area, at least, or this part of the state, we seem to be on the cutting edge. But without putting anybody down or any counties down, I just wanted to say thank you to all the work that we are doing here. And I don't know if anybody else had comments, or if you want to comment later. I know I want to just make sure that we don't forget about that day where we took 12 hours to go do that.
Shauna, and then Leslie.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Annie for setting that up. I know that took a lot of coordination. I'd also like to thank the staff at the Sheriff's Department, Captain Ray Bontz, Kyle, as well as Undersheriff and Sheriff, took us on those on our quote-unquote field trip. And I think for me personally, it was very eye-opening to see the surrounding jails. It was also very good in thinking that we're moving forward with possibly either renovating or building a new jail ourselves to look at the more modern pods that they had in place. I would encourage anyone, any one of our 14, if you were unable to attend, to try and make a field trip out there and take a look, because I think it was really, it's very helpful for me to get an idea of what we're looking at moving forward. I also am very, after visiting with the three different jails and the staff there, I feel that much more fortunate that we have such good staff at our local jail and at our local sheriff's department. I also, as Annie mentioned, you see the population, for example, Binghamton, that has doubled the population and has 600 beds. That's really astonishing. So I feel very fortunate of the good work that we're doing here. It's interesting because in the mindset of some of the other places that we visited, they saw bail reform as a very negative thing. And for us, of course, we think it's a very positive thing. And our whole idea moving forward is to really not have people in our jail system. And that wasn't necessarily what we saw whenever we were touring. So, thank you.
Leslie?
Thank you. Shauna said a bit of what I wanted to say, just the thank yous in particular. But I want to make sure that it's clear to folks that the LGBTQ plus task force, law enforcement interaction task force, is a task force subcommittee. It's a subcommittee of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. So we didn't just up and decide we're just going to go toward jails. We actually have been very interested in what other facilities are doing relative to their policies and their practice around search and housing of the transgender population. So that was a question that, and the impetus behind, you know, sort of this happening, aside from other things as well. And it was interesting for us to see that nobody really thought about it, thinks about it at all. And some of the comments, oh, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. You know, it's pretty much what we heard, right?
Right. They said it's not an issue.
It's not an issue, you know, we'll cross, it's not an issue. And in some respects, quite dismissive as well. So I just want to make sure it was clear that, you know, that was sort of the impetus behind us going on this tour. Martha and I do remember going in 2005 or something to Delhi when the pods were first introduced. And we thought that that was, you know, quite interesting. There was nobody in it. It didn't look that good this time around. The other thing that I kept straying a little bit, I did, but just hearing folks talk about some of the people who were leading us around, talk about Tompkins County and its commitment to alternatives to incarceration programs. We're known for it, and we do it. And I know there are a lot of people in this community who often don't feel like we're doing enough. And I do encourage people to go to these other places and see what is not happening, and how much they, in some respects, I would say poo-poo us for doing what we do. You know, sort of like, oh, you know, these are bad people, you lock them up and, you know, here you go, as opposed to allowing for alternatives. So it is always interesting to me, and so I wanted to just share that and echo thanks to members of the Sheriff's Department for coming along with us and making it really worthwhile and answering some of the questions we still had as well. So thank you.
All right. Thanks. Anything else for WDIC? All right. Thanks, all. Good discussion. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
So, as most of you know, we had a special committee meeting on the 12th, so 10 days ago, and we had two presentations. One of them was from Thomas Lucchini. I just sent you all an email with links to these videos and called him John Lucchini. Sorry, John, Tom. Thomas Lucchini is his actual name, who is a specialist in housing and a lawyer at Law New York, who gave us a presentation, an extensive, detailed presentation on the most recent Security and Tenant Protections Act updates, 2019 state law updates. Turns out this is the biggest overhaul that has happened in housing laws at the state level since World War II. So quite impressive, meeting needs that have been there for decades. There were a bunch of landlords in the audience who said afterwards they found it very helpful. There were things that are very easy to misunderstand about it because there is such an extensive amount of change that has happened, and it's very nuanced, and all of you have landlords in your districts, so I asked for it to be filmed, and thank you to Kathy for supporting my non-traditional way about getting that this once, which cannot be a tradition. Because of the burdens of doing the logistics of it, but this seemed particularly important as an exception. Please, I emailed you the link to the video. Please share it where you can with landlords because I really do believe that it will help. And the second video was Barbara Cashin, who we created a position through an OTR last year, as you all remember, to address issues of homelessness and risk of eviction. And the position was created for Barbara Cashin at Law New York. She is doing phenomenal work, and that was also videotaped. Again, I sent all of you an email with that video as well. They were separated into two separate videos. Please do watch them, and I will not belabor that anymore except to say she's doing phenomenal work. The next meeting that we have for Housing and Economic Development is August 22nd, this Thursday at 9:30 in the morning. One of the presentations we have is a presentation on the 2020 STPV budget. So if you're interested, that will be on the agenda. And that's my full report.
Thank you. Anna, any questions? Thank you very much. So does that one email have the link to both of the videos?
So we, Tompkins County, has a Vimeo, we have a Vimeo site that Jim manages. All of the videos are on that, including all the past ones that he's done. But the two most recent ones are those two videos.
Okay. Thanks so much. All right. Complete Census Count Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
We had a really interesting large group meeting. I call it a large group meeting or community meeting at the at TCPL. We sent out invitations to I think over 100 groups. We had a small group that got together from the Census Committee and put together some of the names that had come to us and other folks that we wanted to be invited. We look back at what was done 10 years ago to try to get some ideas. And we had a great turnout, probably at least 40 people. And we went around the room, and we had a number of legislators there. Thank you for everyone who came. Martha, you were there. And we went around the room and introduced ourselves so that the group could see what a wide variety of people are interested in the census and helping to get a full count. We had a presentation from Kate Dillon from the United States Census and from Chuck about also from Census about the jobs that are going to be available, the temporary census taker jobs. We had a presentation from Tompkins County Public Library, Teresa Vatican, who talked about how our library is going to be helping people to fill out the online questions for the census this time. Greg Potter also spoke a little bit about our website and IT, the IT help that we hope to have. Maybe we're going to do some kind of outreach, such as quote-unquote a mobile presence to get out to some of the places like community centers, trailer parks, other places, so that we could, if we find a place to set up, maybe we can try to encourage more people. We're trying to get the elderly, the students, the little children are often undercounted. We were shown a couple of maps showing some of the most undercounted places in Tompkins County, and one of the worst is East Hill area, where we believe a lot of grad students live. That's up in Henry's district up there. So Henry, you got to beat the bushes to get them out. But it's very important, and it's not the last of the meetings we're going to have. We're going to meet next as a regular group on the 9th of September at 9 o'clock here. But I think we're off to a good start, and it's serious, a little bit fun. And we're going to be, we're going to get the full count the best we can.
Thanks, Mike. Amanda and then Deborah.
Thanks. I just want to jump in. I met yesterday with the Public Information Advisory Board. I sent some of you an email. The group did a great job talking about how they could be involved. And one of the things that we are going to work on is looking at that map. And I actually spent some time looking at that map yesterday. And the group is planning. Kate Dillon was there, and she's put together a very brief presentation that the PIAB members can go out to various community organizations or churches or schools or whatnot, and she'll go with the committee member, and they'll give this presentation. So I kind of have looked through this map, and I'm trying to kind of narrow down where those problem areas are. Big one is college students. All of the city, pretty much all of the city legislators' districts are historically, people don't respond. Shauna in my district, pretty bad responders. Deborah's district.
Really?
Yeah. So my point in saying all this is that I'm kind of going to be working with them, looking at this map. I may be reaching out to you and saying, you know, around the country club, East Hill, you know, where could the PIAB members go to give a presentation? And ideally, you guys know your districts. Trumansburg is very good.
I know. Continue.
Pretty much the only district that was like, well, Mike's too, actually, was very good. Anyway, so I had fun looking at this. I will probably send an email out and just try to get some ideas from you where the members can go to if you have, you know, community groups that people can gather and hear this presentation about the census to get as many people out there as possible. So, yeah, thanks.
Deborah and then Annie.
I was just curious to know, when actually
does the census process start?
I think it'll be in March. I forgot what the exact census day is. I don't think we got a...
April 1st is the day of record.
10 years ago, we said they want to count you where you sleep. So we want the students, we want the folks, you know, who are perhaps temporary labor here, folks that might be a little worried that the census might be dangerous for them to apply for. They need to be sure and be reassured that this is a confidential report. We had some people from the audience, from the one person in particular on the from the Latino group, saying they need to hear from elected officials over and over again that this is safe, to try to encourage folks in the community to participate.
Annie, and then wait. It was Annie, right? And then Amanda again.
So I'm glad that you had that presentation, which I also attended, and I was glad to hear the layers of security for people's private information that they do have, a lot of firewalls, and including keeping it from the executive branch. So there's a lot of layers, and we can't say that enough. People need to be reassured, and if we are people in the community that maybe some people look up to, and we're out and about a lot, so please get that information out. And the municipalities in my district are very eager to help, and particularly the town of Enfield already has some ideas, so maybe someone can connect with them. They had a list of like 5-6 ideas to get out the word, and locations, and all types of events to help. So they're really eager.
Amanda, and then Henry.
Just to finish answering your question, Deborah, because Kate Dillon went over it again yesterday with us. People will get something in the mail starting in March inviting you to participate online, because that is really how they want people to answer, is online. The date is April 1st, 2020, and there's going to be numerous mailings. There'll be a couple more mailings. If you don't fill it out, they'll send you something saying, hey, you got to fill it out. And then at some point by, I don't know, May, if you still haven't filled it out,
they'll start sending people out.
It's all short form, 10 questions, very straightforward, and exactly what Annie said. Like, census takers have to make a lifetime oath that they will never share this information. Nothing can get the information from the iPads or anywhere. You cannot get this information. It's not going to be shared ever.
Yeah, that was really, she was like blood oath, you know, like, yeah, very serious. Henry, and then Anna.
Matt just said what I was going to say.
Okay. Anna.
Yeah, I just want to note, too, you know, part of the reason that we all need to do the extra work and the whole community needs to do extra work is probably less for the people that have computers, but more the people who don't have computers or who are homeless, who also need to be counted, because the whole point is that, or one of the biggest points about it is that it affects what funding you get from the federal government. So if we are undercounted, then that could significantly affect the support that we get. So hopefully everyone watching will also get engaged to make sure that people who are disadvantaged or don't have computers or don't have homes, you know, are also identified.
And representation.
Political representation. Deborah?
Well, I would think that churches, especially in the periphery of the county, would be a good place to present your program. But also, I know that the ag, like Lansing has an ag committee. If your towns have ag committees, you might want to reach out through those groups, because a lot of those farmers are employing people who might be somewhat reluctant to participate, and it's in the farmer's best interest to make sure that their folks do participate.
That's a really good point. I just wanted to also mention that they're looking for, that they're hiring people. They wanted to hire something like 300 people.
It's like 800 in Tompkins County.
800 in Tompkins County?
Where do people apply?
Online.
Census, just look at the census online. You can find a lot of information.
Can I clarify that?
Yeah.
I believe they said they want about 800 people to apply, and I think they're going to hire about 300 and something.
Okay, and it's a decent wage, 17 or something.
It starts at 17.
Right. And the crucial issue about what do students do, or farm workers, or anybody, it's where you are on April 1st, and that's, you have to pick a date. And that's really important.
April Fool's Day?
Sure.
Wow.
It's in the Constitution, Deborah Reeve. So they have, and I think the university and the colleges are going to really have an interest in pushing this. I was really impressed with... but it also, remember, we're thinking, oh, online is going to make it hard for certain people. True. On the other hand, online is likely to make it way easier for all those students who have never heard of, like, bringing a notepad somewhere or finding an envelope with a stamp. So I think it's a good opportunity that, of course, you can do it online. So it should be, social media should be a good tool to get people to do this. They also, I was impressed with the multiple ways of trying to reach people. That was impressive. They also have like 14 different languages where all the questions are in 14 different languages and you can answer in those languages. That was impressive. And I really liked, was the main presenter, was that Kate Dillon?
Yes.
She was great. I mean, she really wanted to emphasize that it's easy, safe, and important. And those are really good things to remember. So thanks to the committee for organizing that and for making sure that we get off to a good start. I assume, are we going to get a TCOG presentation? Is that on your list? I'm sure TCOG.
TCOG representatives that come. Nancy,
sure, said. But I'm sure that all the municipalities would be interested if Kate really is available to come. I don't know how many times
we can certainly talk about that at our next meeting with our TCOG representative.
Great, thank you. Leslin.
And the city, you said easy, safe, and something else, and the citizenship question is not on it.
The citizen?
Capital N-O-T,
right.
Not. So if anybody's asking you that question when it comes around, they should not be.
That's right. It's not on there. Henry?
But they do want non-citizens to take the test,
absolutely,
to fill out the survey.
The Constitution says every 10 years, a count of every person living in the country. That's right. So very important. At the picnic yesterday, I sat next to Greg Potter for a while, and he was talking about doing the redistricting. I know that's another question that we'll have to deal with later, but he really enjoys doing the redistricting maps based on the census information. And this will be his third one, so he's interested in, he's looking forward to that. All right. Thanks very much, Census Committee. Appreciate it. Downtown, we've done. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I'll start out with a couple of resolutions. The first is Resolution K, Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice, ID 8757, and I would move it.
Seconded by Henry. Discussion? All right, short form roll call.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Leslin McBean Claiborne?
Yes. Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Thank you. The next resolution is the one Mike Lane mentioned. This is Resolution L, appropriation from contingent fund to cover expenses of expert witness, district attorney, ID 8818, and I would move it.
Seconded by Henry.
And discussion. Just to remind everybody, this is for the payment of expert witness fees in a case where our local district attorney was conflicted out, so we have the Schuyler County district attorney managing the case, and he determined he needed this expert witness.
Okay, any questions? Leslie.
I'm not sure I have a question. I voted against this in committee because I was really struggling with $175 per hour for travel. And I'm not sure, I don't know where the witness is coming from. It just seemed a little excessive. That was all. I know we have to pay the bill for the person to be here, but that just seemed excessive, and I had no more information about, are we flying this person in every day? I have no idea. So I couldn't bring myself to support that, and I wanted to make sure that I mentioned. That's why I was struggling with it, and I still am.
Well, Mike, I heard that the guy's from Boston.
Yeah, I believe.
Harvard University professor or something?
Yes, I think he's coming from Boston. Having hired expert witnesses myself, this is what they charge. And
$5 of travel?
I have had to hire expert witnesses where they didn't differentiate the rate for travel.
It was just $350 an hour across.
Yes.
I'm not even worried about that. Travel is what got me.
No, they were saying $350 for travel.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying.
If they're really, really good, they charge you to breathe.
Oh, Deborah, I got that part, girl. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to get in that business myself.
Is this an up to idea, up to $10,000, or do we think that this is going to be the bill?
I would anticipate that there would be a bill submitted for the actual hours worked,
okay.
Up to $10,000.
It's estimated total expense of $10,000. Yeah, this is what's estimated. You know, if this was the district attorney isn't taking this case, it's a conflict, it's moved to another district attorney to prosecute the case. This is the cost of doing business, unfortunately. I don't think you really have many options unless you don't want to hire the expert witness with the advice of the prosecuting attorney.
All right. Anything else? All right. So short form roll call.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
No.
We'll go through the long.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
That passes.
And then I would just report that the public safety... I'm sorry?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. I'd report that the Public Safety Committee met on August 15th. We had a good discussion about, a long discussion about where do we go from here after the vote last meeting about co-location. And that discussion will continue. I anticipate we're going to get some revised scope from the county administrator to consider on the current existing conditions study on the jail. We will be meeting again on September 19th, and one of the items we will be looking at is the change to the resolution considering changes to hunting with rifles.
Okay, anything else for Rich? So the existing condition study resolution goes to facilities. It went through three committees, so we'll come back to that. Meantime, Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you. We have not met since our last meeting. Our upcoming meeting is Friday, 9 a.m.,
September 6th, and we will be joined by Family and Children's Services. They are going to do a short presentation on the services that they provide locally. So thank you, Rich, for recommending, and
thank you for hosting.
It's a good idea. Other than that, we've had some pretty short agendas, knock on wood, with HHS, but I assume that's probably going to ramp up towards the end of the year. Be prepared.
Okay. All right. Make sure you let me know if you have a quorum question.
We'll do.
Again. Okay. Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. I have two resolutions. Resolution M, appropriation from contingent fund for authorization to contract with Labella Associates, public safety building conditions and program needs assessment, pending other committee action, ID 8791, and I would move that.
Seconded by Anna, or Annie, in front of Dave or Rich, you want to introduce us?
Go ahead, Rich.
This is the existing conditions study of the jail. The idea is to look at the present condition and try to determine costs if we wanted to use our present facility and upgrade it to usable condition. We've identified already our facilities director, Aurel Lamoro, has gone through the jail pretty extensively. What we don't have yet is the added estimates of cost, and this study would allow us to get that. We would then use this information to really determine whether it makes sense to try to just repair what we have or to build something new. I'd also add, if I can essentially reopen my public safety report for a second, I did want to say thank you to Ann Corman for the jail tour that you organized. I'm sorry I couldn't attend it. But I wanted to say in regard to our local ATIs, and particularly the vote we took 2 years ago on our budget, really committing significant funds to alternatives to incarceration, and it seems to be working. You know, it's very hard to line up cause and effect, but again, we've had a month where we've actually helped Cortland County by boarding in some of their inmates. When New York State took away our variants, we were really worried that we were going to be in a very difficult spot. We lost 18 beds, if I can remind everybody, and yet our programs seem to be addressing not just the loss of the 18 beds, but our numbers have actually gone down below what we expected from there. And we seem to be proceeding, I don't want to jinx anything, but in line with the CGR report of what we might be able to accomplish. So this is a really, really good story. At the same time, we've clearly recognized that the facility that we have that was built in 1986 has gone through its useful life. And we, in order to accomplish what we want to try to do in terms of programming inside the building, we have to think very carefully about that facility. And this study would allow us to help do that.
Thanks, Rich. Any other comments or questions? I have a question. I don't think we discuss this. Will, if we were to renovate that building, we have to house the inmates somewhere else during rent?
I don't know the answer to that question. Depends.
Right, but is that going to be part of the scope to sort of give us an estimate of what would it take to put up?
I imagine one of the things that would be considered is if you were to do the renovations, if it requires a swing space, so to speak, that would be part of the project. So, I mean, if it requires total evacuation while you're doing it, it would have to be built into the cost because that would be a cost of the project.
Because I know of Dutchess County where they did something like this and they brought in, I can't really describe, maybe trailers or something. You know, they do very temporary construction that's heated and safe and all of that, but it's a way to accommodate people while you're building. So I would hope that be included so we really get the full picture. All right, anything else on this? Rich, was there an interest in
taking out some of the language that refers to the co-location?
We certainly can do that.
The second whereas and part of the third?
Yeah, and I guess I would move to amend removing the whereas starting on line 10 to line 15 and the beginning of the whereas on line 17 and line 18 up to the word city in the second line 18. So it would read, whereas the county legislature is desirous of completing a condition assessment of the existing county public safety building on Warren Road, which was built in 1986 and has not had any major renovations in nearly 33 years.
Yes. All right, so that's a motion, or is that friendly to the... I'm sorry?
That's friendly,
and sorry, who seconded? Friendly? Okay. All right, ready to vote? Another short-form roll call.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay, now I have resolution N, authorization to amend the capital program, adding Boswick Road Department of Public Works facility shop improvements. And that again was pending other committee action. ID 8829, and I would move that.
Seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion, Dave? Anything? Okay, I wanted to mention that I had some questions based on the memo, packet page 27, about whether this scope and $450,000 was actually going to cover actual upgrades of the HVAC or whether it's just studying and recommending options. And there was back and forth today and heard that it was, the idea was that the hope is that this budget includes actually upgrading the HVAC as well as everything else, but it sort of depends on how the costs develop. Did I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like $50,000 or less is more engineering and the rest would be for construction.
And that the planning department, especially with expertise in renewable heating and cooling, are going to be brought in to advise on HVAC options. So anything else from anybody? All right, we need 10 votes. It's an amendment to the capital program. All in favor, please raise your hands. Short-form roll call. Okay.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Are there any no's? Well, then you got 14, so that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Anything else, Dave?
Yeah, I'll just say that the facilities met on August 15th, and the discussion included seven resolutions that were on the consent agenda. We also had a short update from the airport and a discussion of property on Warren Road.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Any questions? All right. Appreciate that. Can I get
Martha?
I just had
one thing. I think Rick Snyder had said he was going to add something about the balance at the highway department.
Yeah, I'll pass these out to save time. I'll just pass them around so you can take them with you. The question was, what was the defund balance? So it's currently at $1.8 million with the subtraction of this $450,000 and a couple of other small projects. That would bring us down to a fund balance of $1.1 million. So we're going from 1.8 to 1.1. And this little memo that went out to various employees about a month ago describes how we made that calculation.
Thank you.
Good memory, Annie. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Can I get a motion on the minutes of August 6, 2019? Moved by Anna, seconded by Glenn. Any comments on them? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Unfinished business. Annie, did you have something? Yes.
Yes. I'd like to move that we go into executive session to discuss a particular real estate issue.
All right. Is there a second? Second by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? You're opposed? Glenn, one is opposed. All in favor of executive session? Question.
I'm going to ask Jonathan, is the statement okay to go into executive session in general?
Well, in general, I have no idea what the executive session is about.
What was the?
She said it was real estate.
Real estate. Real estate negotiations. What are we talking about?
A potential real estate purchase, I would assume.
Okay. Regarding a potential real estate purchase.
Is it about Greenland? Because
it's not for sale, Mike. I'm sorry. It's about Denmark.
Everything's for Greenland.
It is funny. All right. I've obviously lost track of the vote. All in favor of going to executive session, please raise your hands. Opposed. Two opposed.
You're building a coalition, Glenn.
Two. All right. All right. We're going to take a 5-minute break and shut down the cameras, and then we'll come back. We're in executive session. So, Andy, you want to present your question?
Sure. I sent out an email earlier today. I don't know if everybody's had a chance to look at it. It was at a little after 2. So at facilities and infrastructure, was it this week? Last week?
Last week.
We had a presentation from Alan from facilities regarding a property that's for sale at 767 Warren Road. And so I'll just let people chime in. I guess there was some people that went up to take a look at it as possible location for the sheriff's offices. And so Alan had offered to us at facilities, after he did a presentation about the building, that if we were interested in going and taking a look at it, that he would set that up. And so at that committee, it seemed like there was an interest to do that, and so I then cast the net a little wider to see if other legislators were interested in going to see that. And so I, rather than just say the rest, I'll let people, I'd like to know what happened at public safety regarding this, people's opinions about going to check out this property.
Right. So the facilities committee kind of left with an understanding that Annie was going to send out a doodle poll and set up a tour. Right. That was the way it was left. And then about a half hour later, public safety met. And Jason, do you want to sort of summarize, because we've just passed this resolution on existing condition studies, so this is part of it.
Look, and Rich or anybody from public safety, please try me if I don't get this right, but my understanding, leaving for public safety. Yes?
I am putting my name on the list.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me. Is that not proper process?
Yeah.
Come on, for God's sakes.
So,
okay.
My leaving the meeting, during the conversation during the committee was to, the direction given was to expand the scope with Labella to include with the condition assessment other site options so that there was an apples-to-apples comparison of what a renovation of the existing facility may cost in comparison to three other options. One is a new build adjacent to the CFR building, a new build adjacent to the existing building, as well as 767 Warren Road. And that was what Arel and I and the sheriff have to get together to talk over with Labella as to what would that expanded scope of the existing condition assessment include, so that we can bring that back, if not to the September meeting, for sure to the October meeting for action, which would most likely expand the cost of the assessment that you just approved tonight.
Anna, and then Rich.
I just wanted to add, there was a Martha, you sent an email out earlier today, which wasn't reminiscent to me of what we concluded in public safety. So I did want to just communicate my understanding coming out of public safety, and I would ask that others that are in public safety also chime into this specifically so that we can all at least start on the same page. Is we discussed 767, we discussed that we have this existing study, but we did not make a policy decision of moving forward on looking at additional sites yet. It is an option that we can do. I am open absolutely to discussing it. I just didn't know if we had made a policy decision as the committee who votes on these things, if we've made a decision. Have we made a decision? And I'm just not remembering.
Well, let's go to Rich.
I think we only went as far as having Jason present us with a revised scope. And for anybody who wants to go see 767, you know, no harm, but I think it's important that we try to follow a process in how we go forward with this. I would certainly argue that since it's a public safety building, that primary review sits with the public safety committee. But with that said, I don't have any objection to anybody going and looking at it. I think we need to be careful that we determine what are the needs before we go shopping, that we have a clear idea of what we're trying to get. You know, as I said, information is fine. You know, it doesn't hurt us, but I think we have to make sure we're proceeding in the right order, and I think getting the revised scope would be the best next step.
Now I remember that was what was done. Shauna, Leslin, Henry.
Yeah, one thing that was also talked about in public safety is that we all need to have equal access to the information so that we could all make an educated decision whenever we're voting on these big issues. I think the way that I understood it was that we were, in fact, someone was going to set up a tour, and we were going to go take a look at the building. I'm not sure if we decided who was going to do that, but I remember Rich saying something to the effect of, I don't see a problem with a tour during public safety.
I think that's what I just said. If somebody wants to go look at it, you're welcome.
Yeah. I don't think anyone actually raised their hand and said, I will be organizing it. So perhaps that's where the miscommunication is right now. I, for one, would actually like to take a look at the building. Just because we take a look at the building does not mean that we're going to put a purchase offer in over the weekend. It means that we're looking at a building. So I think that the more we know about that location, maybe it's a good fit, maybe it's not. I don't know. But I think if we can get an idea, that might be something that's on the table.
All right, I've got a bunch of people, but I want to clarify something. I've got Leslin, Henry, Amanda, Anna. I've missed anybody. Dave. I think there is a problem if everybody needs the same information, but it also has to be in the right order. And, I mean, if LaBella comes back and it's really clear and a slam dunk that, you know what, we can't do anything to save that building, we just have to build a new building altogether, then I presume we're not going to go ahead and buy an office building that's not, so that the sheriff's office would not be connected. I think we want, if we're going to build a new building, the ideal is that it's one building for everything. So we don't know that we're going to save the existing building. That's the purpose of the study. So I would rather not waste staff time, realtors' time, legislators' time. I think when the time comes, if that's a direction to take, it seems to me then we organize that. But I think that sends mixed signals, confuses staff, confuses realtors, et cetera, and I don't think it improves our negotiating position if it does come down the line that that's what we want to do. So that's my personal feeling. Leslin, Henry, Amanda, Anna, and Dave.
There's rarely a time that I would say that I feel inadequate, and right now I am feeling completely lost about what's going on here. What is Jason's expanding a scope around if we haven't made a decision that we are getting this property? What's the expanded scope then? I guess I'm really confused.
There was, and I don't want to put words in the mouths of any of my fellow committee members, so correct me, but there seemed to be a very strong feeling that we should be thinking about 767 and alternate sites. And expanding the scope to look at potential other sites and a broader sense of what are the needs was a way to try to figure out what are the next steps. Again, I think it's premature to be looking at 767, but given the discussion we just had about co-location and the hard feelings about it, I don't want to say to anybody, don't look at it. Go ahead. But, you know, when, as Martha alluded to, when you look at costs, you have your capital costs for a jail, your capital costs for road patrol. Your operational costs year to year are going to dwarf that. So making sure we have the most efficient facility, if we were going to do something up there, you know, I'd like us not to jump the line and avoid looking at, if we're going to build a new jail, that we build a road patrol that connects to it, that is rationalized with the jail, that if we could possibly do central booking still or central arraignment, that we have the right setup to do that. You know, no harm. Go look. You know, it's a nice building. It would never be contiguous to a jail, and it's not purpose-built. So if we're going to be looking at it, what this scope would try to do is to give us some sense of comparing that cost to.
So let me see if I can say this so I understand that. So let's say the study comes back and says you have a choice. You're going to build a whole new building, or you're going to renovate the jail and find another location for the civil and the road. Right? That's really the two. Those are really the two options, right? Because renovating the jail means we're moving civil and road out in order to make classrooms and better health care and that sort of thing, right? So if it comes back and says, yeah, we think you can, you know, no, we think you need a brand new building. And we say, okay, and as Jason said, there are lots of new jails that have gotten built, and you can sort of pick the number of beds and you can find a comparable cost. You can estimate a number for a new building pretty easily. But you'd want to compare that to the renovation plus, let's say, 767, if that's the place for the civil on the road. Because that's the apples to apples. You're solving the whole problem with the new building, or you're solving the whole problem with renovation plus the nearby building. Okay. Is that the comparison we're looking for? Is that what we're looking for this study to tell us?
You want to be able to compare apples to apples. You want to be able to compare different options. That's what you want to look at. The difference is this isn't, you know, this isn't a new build versus a renovations, you know, in terms of that exact issue. There are other elements in this discussion that will come out of this other than just cost comparisons. And there's an operational component. You're going to be faced with the issue of a new jail, which may have a more operationally efficient layout versus the existing facility in terms of renovations. You know, that'll be probably something you'll have to face to make a decision. So there'll be some contrast in that. The question of location of civil patrol with respect to the rest of the jail or correction staff is a question to be discussed through the process. So there are several differences in terms of operational questions that will work its way into the capital discussion. It's unavoidable. There's more out there that we probably haven't identified. Retrofitting existing facilities for your energy strategy expectations is a different question versus building a new one. So all of those things have to be, you know, assembled to the best that we can to be able to say, all right, here is the best apples-to-apples comparison, and here's the pros and cons of this option, the pros and cons of that option, the pros and cons of this option, and here's the cost differences so you can weigh them out. I mean, that's really where you're trying to strive for when you go about assessing and analyzing what options you have with this site location. And this has come up from this perspective as a more focused approach, because the co-location discussion is now off the table. So this is now the next question of, all right, what is the focus in terms of site locations, site development, what do we do with the existing building? The numbers may come back astronomical to the point that that narrows your options. You may say this one's way too expensive. We're not even going to consider that because of X, Y, and Z. So I think you don't have enough information in front of you to be able to make that apples to apples comparison if that's the route you want to go.
Okay. We got Henry, Amanda, Anna, and Dave.
I thought after the public safety meeting that Jason had clearly said that he would arrange for a meeting or a tour of the 767. I mean, maybe we can check the minutes and sort of see. But I recall that you stating that, okay, I'll schedule a tour.
I recall asking the question, do you want to go for a tour?
Right.
And
we said.
I said, I got enough consensus to say we would like to set one up. Rich had said, at this point, there's no poison stopping it. And that's the last I left of the meeting.
Okay. Also, with the different analysis going on, we also said that we talked in the meeting about doing two studies at the same time, that looking at the site selection and also looking at the revamping of the jail at the same time. And that was one of the things that we had discussed. And so when I got the email, I assumed, okay, well, Annie's going to set up a doodle poll. Maybe she got authorization from Jason to do it or whatever, and that we're having a tour of the 767. Now, it's not like we're going to buy it or anything else. We're just going to tour through it, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I have no recollection of us agreeing to do two studies. I think we were just trying to expand the scope of the existing study.
Open the other study to, in fact, yes, include site selection.
But it's just revising the scope of what we've already.
Right, because we'd also assume we'd also consider CFR in the same site selection study that we would include class fire and rescue building, too, that we weren't limiting on 767. We are keeping all sites open.
Okay, Amanda.
Thank you. This is fascinating stuff. I'm not on public safety or facilities, but my understanding is that both Jason and Rich, and maybe others, have already toured this building. Okay, well, then that's misinformation.
I have seen it. The sheriff had arranged a tour, and he called me that morning and asked if I wanted to come along. So I did get a chance to.
Great. So you have that information. I see no reason why everyone else couldn't have that same information. And I think the problem that's coming up is that some people want that information and some people don't want us to have it. And I think that despite what happens with the phases and the scopes and all the stuff that's going to happen, that's all great. That's in the future. Right now, people want to go see this building. It's not a big deal. People have already put their staff time into it. Jason has put time into it. The various committees have already talked about it. It's not a big secret. So let it go.
Amanda, I wasn't saying don't look at the building. I think I've said it repeatedly.
You weren't. So thank you for saying that.
Amanda, I want to make it clear that legislators do certain work and staff do other work, and
Martha, don't talk back to me. I'm done.
You just accused me of something, so I wanted to just address it.
Everyone read your email saying that we should not go and see this building.
All right, I got Anna and then Dave.
I think people should just go see the building. I mean, I think that on the floor, I just want to bring back something that I mentioned in committee that I feel strongly about, which is we're going to evaluate the building was something I heard on the floor. And the only request that I've made, which I'm going to bring back, is let's all go look at a building so that we all have it in our heads. I don't care one way or another. Great. Which we should. We all can then, when we say we're talking about the front floor, everybody knows what we're talking about. Great. The only thing that I would like, and I'm hoping, Jason, that what you said clarified this,
But I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. What I was asking is, we're going to evaluate it based on what? That's my only concern, is that we have criteria, that we know what we're looking for, and that we, when we say evaluate, based off of what needs, based off of what, I don't care if we, then maybe it'll all be retrospective, we'll all have a building in our minds, and then when you come back with a scope and you say this is the criteria that we are basing it off of for comparison, or this is what we're looking for, I just don't know that. So I would love for the staff to be able to tell me what criteria I should be evaluating what I'm looking at.
So there has been a space needs analysis done about a year ago with Labella to identify square footage needs based on the operations. That was done under the prior sheriff. When Derek and Jen came on board, we had a meeting with Labella again to say, do these space needs make sense? Have you reviewed them? They have. That information was then used with the initial work that was done in partnership with the city to determine rough square footage size of a facility. What I would envision in an existing layout, like an existing building that exists, is there would be an evaluation done. Does this square footage meet the need? Can the building be structured in a way that's going to accommodate or be reconstructed or renovated to accommodate the existing needs and operational workflow of the sheriff's admin or civil and patrol unit? I would also imagine that with an existing structure, there are going to be questions that the engineers are going to have to answer about when it was constructed with the expectation of it being an office space. Is that different than a public safety space? Because there is, there's a difference in usage. I would also expect there to be an energy evaluation based on the legislature's expectations of energy use and development in a new construction or renovation. So all of those factors would go into evaluating an existing structure. In this case, 767, they would use that lens to evaluate the building based on the information they have with the space needs piece.
So I guess just the one thing that I would ask is, what my concern is that we, in the ideal world, in my mind, we would step back and say, what are our needs?
Yes.
Independent of a building,
yes.
What are the actual needs that in an ideal situation we would meet, and then we go forward to try and meet it.
Yep.
What I'm concerned about is that we instead go about it the other way around, which is, here's a building, and we're going to try and figure out what needs we can get into that building, which might not be what we would have identified as our needs independent of a physical space. So if I can just, when I go through, and maybe this isn't possible time-wise, but if I can have some list of, here are some needs that the sheriff has identified or that the previous public safety has identified, so that when I go into the building, I kind of have something in mind that I'm using as a criteria for assessment, that would be ideal.
We can share what we have to date that was what Labella would use, which is the space needs assessment. They had done a pre-sketch of, what a new build-out would look like, but I think the space needs is what you're asking for, which is what we can provide you all. And that was the work that was done about a year ago.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's going to answer your question, actually. It was really, what they did was really sketchy.
It was, but it's at least something. I mean, if we're doing it anyway, I liked it.
Dave and then Deborah. Okay.
I agree with Jason that the three areas are what we should be talking about right now, because we've basically done away with downtown co-location. As far as 767 goes, I just wanted to see the darn building. It's not a done deal by any stretch in any direction. And we do have an investment in that building, because I've got a floor plan, which I believe was done by the sheriff, that lists the needs and shows where they are. So, that's what I have on it. But from sounds of this discussion and the way things have been going, the Grants Fire and Rescue Building is 2 years out, and it'll probably be constructed before we solve this argument.
My understanding is that we have legal issues with Crash, Fire, and Rescue as well, with the FAA. We have legal issues with 767 because it's a land lease with Cornell. So I assume that the
health department's a land lease with Cornell. What's the difference?
Well, we don't know if legally a public safety building is a different
jail
animal.
Might be different. I can't see where the public safety portion of it would be different.
I don't know if there's a legal issue. So let's just say there's a range of things that will go into the study. So, Deborah?
I would like to see a building. That's all. Respectfully, I think that I'm perfectly capable of gathering information in a variety of orders. I am perfectly capable of looking at this building and remembering it when we get the study from Labello. I don't need someone to tell me in what order I should be gathering information. And frankly, when somebody does that, I feel like process of some kind is being used to beat me into line. And I've had a year and a half of that. And I'm getting kind of angry about it. So if I seem oppositional and nasty, it's because I've been hearing about how we need to do things in a certain order and we need to respect staff. And, you know, these are all reasons why I can't get information and I can't propel an initiative. And, you know, this building and viewing this building is just another example. And frankly, my feelings about this are why I thought it would be better to do this in executive session. I don't particularly care to air this stuff in public, but Jesus, all we want to do is look at a building that other people have seen.
This is the point is that it's legally not an executive session topic. Mike?
I'd like to move to adjourn.
All right.
Wait, do you want us to schedule a tour of the facility?
Yeah, I think that's a little premature, Mike. I understand. If I can...
I got a second.
All right, then I'm going to discuss the motion to adjourn and ask for any other...
I'll withdraw my second so we can schedule a
ticket. All right. If I can say something, I'm not trying to hide any information from anybody. I'm curious, who has seen the building?
Uh-huh. No, I think, I'll be honest, candidly speaking, I think the challenge with this, how this issue has come up, and take this for what it's worth, this is my observation. The challenge with this...
Point of order. We're talking about going into adjournment. Are we voting to adjourn or not?
No, that motion's
discussion of the motion to
adjourn. Martha said she's going to speak to the topic.
This is just...
Right. You got to actually vote on it.
No, you can discuss whether to... It's a motion. You don't have to... You can discuss whether to adjourn.
We have to discuss whether we're adjourning, not what Jason's telling.
Excuse me.
She withdrew.
But Glenn said he seconded it.
All right. I didn't recognize Glenn, okay? Whether you like it or not, I'm still here, and I recognize people who speak, okay? We had a motion. It hasn't been second has been withdrawn. Jason is talking. I really think we can do better than this. I really do. I think we need to listen to our staff. We need to listen to each other and not throw accusations around. I don't think that's productive. Jason.
Yes.
Please.
Do you want me to schedule a tour of the building?
Jason, I would like to hear what you were about to say.
I have nothing to add.
I thought you said that you saw the building.
Okay, Henry, did you want to raise your hand? Henry.
Thank you. I thought you said you saw the building a couple of months ago in connection with looking for space.
No, I have never looked at the building. I will tell you the sequence of events if you want me to, where I think the challenge has come. If you want me to, I will. If not, I'll just schedule the tour.
I would like to hear the sequence of events.
I'd like to hear the sequence of events, too.
About 4 weeks ago, prior to taking action on the shared facility discussion. That was an issue that was up for discussion. You were debating it. You had not taken action. The sheriff had contacted me and said, this building, I saw it. I want to take a look at it. I think it's a great fit. My communication with the sheriff was, at this stage of the game, the direction from the legislature is that you are debating a shared service, a shared facility discussion. I said, I'm not going to look at the building until I get other direction from the legislature that that issue is either done with, you either want to move forward, or you want to continue to look at other alternatives in addition to it. From my perspective, I think that's a little bit where the train went off the tracks. Just my observation is that some folks who were not interested in the shared facility discussion were interested in that, and some of that information was not shared with the whole legislature in terms of that facility. Just my simple observation. That seems to be where some of the disconnect is. It's irrelevant at this stage. The shared facility discussion is off the table. If you want to look at multiple sites or other options, we can do that as part of this review. If you want me to schedule a tour with the facility, we will have our facilities staff schedule a tour for the facility.
Annie.
So, Jason and Jonathan and Rick, just because you're here, also another staff. But, I just wanted to say that, you know, I think the legislature right now, we're having some difficulty maybe communicating. There's some feelings and stuff like that. And I just want to say that, personally, I don't mean to put you in the middle of this, so I apologize for any of this, and I don't want to make your guys' jobs harder. I really appreciate, you know, the work you do. So it sounds, as far as doing a tour, I started the email. We could start with that if you want.
Build off of that. When there's a consensus on the date, we'll get it to Alan and Arell. We'll contact the property owner. We'll get it set up, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
And if someone can't make the date, obviously we can set up a follow-up.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Let me just say, I'm not interested in hiding anything from anybody. I'm interested in staff getting clear direction from the legislature and doing the things that we've asked them to do. And frankly, if I did not hear the facilities discussion where Annie said, I'll schedule a tour. So I didn't know that happened. And I didn't remember that part of it at the end of public safety. There was the conversation about developing the scope of work. And I was focused on, okay, we don't have a scope of work yet. We're voting on this up to $74,000 study. Jason will come back to the next committee meeting with the scope of work. And I was focused on that. And I thought, okay, that's what we need as far as really getting clarity on what the next step is. I have no problem with this. It's obviously true. It's been discussed plenty in public, so the owners know that that's out there. So I'll look forward to seeing the building, and I don't think anybody needs to make assumptions about intentions when you don't have all the information. Thank you very much. Rich.
Motion to adjourn.
All right. Second. Seconded by Annie. All in favor? Annie opposed? All right. We're adjourned. Wait, you're opposed, Mike?
Yeah.